application whitelisting is really the concept, as my colleague Paul Bartok, who unfortunately passed away last week, would have said, you can download it, but you can't install it. And really what that means is that by default, most operating systems today allow anything to run. If you get a free USB flash drive at a conference and you plug it into your computer and there's some malicious software on there, it's allowed to run. You get a spear phishing email with a malicious attachment that comes in, you accidentally click on the attachment, it starts running and doing its malicious activities, things like that. So everything is allowed to run right now. But with application whitelisting, the idea is that only the things that we allow to run, that we specify in the whitelist, are allowed to run, and everything else, all that malicious and unauthorized things, are blocked from running. And the way that we're doing it is a slight difference from how classic application whitelisting works. So for the last decade, let's say, application whitelisting has been a recommended computer security technique, but really it hasn't been implemented across the board. And the reason for that is that it's been very difficult to implement. In classic whitelisting, you have to identify each and every single file that's associated with an application. And each application has potentially hundreds of files. And then if you have thousands of applications across your network, as we do in DoD, it becomes really just too burdensome to manage the whitelist and keep it up to date as you're installing new applications and updating things. So what we did was we said, rather than identifying each and every single individual file, or even just each individual application, because there's too many, instead we'll identify the locations where many applications are installed. And then we'll protect those locations so only admins can make changes to those applications or install new ones. And that way, anything within those locations is allowed to run, all the existing software that our users need to do their jobs. But all those other things, the malicious software, the unauthorized software, the random things that are downloaded, the malicious things that come in on, you know, removable media and flash drives, all that stuff is blocked. And so between application whitelisting in conjunction with the existing, you know, security best practices, antivirus and things like that, we think that we can block, you know, over 80% of common malware.
I have heard reports from other places that have instituted whitelisting that they get a short-term loss of productivity and a short to sometimes long-term list of complaints from users about, hey, how come I can't fill in the blank, whatever it is that they're complaining about. Have you run into any of that at NSA?
Well, so certainly there's a little bit of a culture change. You know, so users are used to downloading and running whatever they feel like. And so with application whitelisting, we're actually enforcing, at least within DoD and the government, the policy that we already have written, which is that only approved software that the government or the command in DoD has accepted the risk of, because every piece of software has potential vulnerabilities and opens up the network to risk of infiltration by adversaries. Only those approved things that we already say are the only things that should be running, we're now just technically enforcing that only those things run. So there is a bit of a culture change. But in general, with the way that we're doing it, where you audit the network first and see what would be blocked, and you customize the rules a little bit to make sure that all the software that users need to do their jobs runs just fine, we've had very, very few complaints, actually.
What's the difference between doing it this way and doing a standard antivirus patch, update, scan type of protection and security?
Well, again, I mean, it's difficult to tell the exact difference between standard security, you know, those security things and how many pieces of malware that they'll block versus, you know, this in conjunction with those. And it's important to say that this complements those. This is not a replacement for all the standard security practices. But it does block many things. And, you know, for example, with patching, it's difficult to patch everything in a very timely manner. You know, sometimes there are adversaries that are able to reverse engineer a patch and make malware that will exploit that vulnerability within hours of when the patch is released. And most places can't actually install a patch that quickly. And so having application whitelisting as an additional defense in depth means that even if the adversary can use that vulnerability and exploit it within that time frame, there's something else that hopefully should be blocking them from actually achieving the success that they want, which is getting on your box and getting something to run on that computer and perform malicious activities. In this case, it may use that vulnerability to get on the computer, but then application whitelisting would prevent it from running and doing its malicious purpose.
Now, another, I guess, disadvantage of whitelisting that folks have talked about in the traditional way, not the way you're doing it, but the traditional whitelisting method is, time-wise and resource-wise, it can be a little intense, especially to ramp up. Are you experiencing the same thing here?
Well, so there's a little bit of the same at the very beginning. You know, not quite as intensive, but you do have to do a little bit of auditing the network to see what would be blocked, and that way we can tailor the rules. That way all the normal applications that users need, if they need some exceptions or tweaks to the whitelist, if they're running out of a slightly unusual location somewhere, they won't be blocked, so users won't have any issues doing their day-to-day jobs. But other than that, there really is very little that it'll prevent the users from doing. And in terms of the hours, the actual burden on the administrators, so the user experience may be the same and fewer things will be blocked. For the admins, with classic whitelisting, for one network where they were using a commercial solution, where they were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to license it, and then there were 2 to 3 full-time people, say 100 hours a week, to manage it and modify the whitelist as things were updated and new things were installed. With us, we're a similar network using this approach. We used capabilities that were built into the operating system, so no additional funds for licensing software, and then the administration of the whitelist, they said it was about an hour or two a week to monitor the event logs and see if anything broke and then tweak things appropriately if necessary.
So lifecycle-wise, there's a tremendous savings potential here.
Absolutely.
Is this something, what's the status of this DoD-wide? Is this something that you're trying in a particular area? Are you rolling this out all across the agency?
Right. So we've done it already for DoD at a couple of commands on smaller networks to prove the feasibility of it and get some of that data that it is easier and still does block malware. And now we've incorporated it within the Unified Master Gold Disk, the UMGD effort that the DoD CIO is mandating, that all new computers that are installed within the department are based off of this baseline. So we've incorporated it into that baseline image, so every new computer should have application whitelisting as part of it. And we're already seeing broad adoption, several hundred thousand computers already, that are enforcing this approach to application whitelisting.